I didn't see the worksheet. I do have one question. As I reviewed the notes, Michael, and trying to get this in my brain, I
Fine.
have down in my notes, I could have it incorrect, that reality management is what we see as reality is the output. Let me rephrase that. What I'm seeing as reality is the output of my mind.
Correct. Everything that we
Okay.
think we see with the eye is actually a product of brain cells firing and is a construct of the brain. It's the mind attempting to match what's going on in the world of actuality. But of course, the problem with it attempting to match what's going on in actuality is alive. Everything in the past is already dead. That's what I think led Yeshua to say to one gentleman, let the dead bury the dead. Let the blind lead the blind. If you're coming from your mind, it might have been a wonderful piece of information yesterday, but you know what? That piece of information today is dead. If it applies today and it's alive today, great. But if you're getting it from your mind from the past, and there are some good constructs in the mind and they can be useful, but they're not alive. And what we're looking to do is at every moment to actually be alive in a live experience and use the mind as a database when we need it. Great storage
Only
system.
when we want. Yeah.
Yeah, being conscious of it. I mean, imagine the person who's run by the content of their computer. Computer can do all kinds of wonderful things, but what if your life was run by one? Something that's obviously not alive is running your life, information from the past. And so the objective of this work ultimately is to actually, go back to Yeshua once again. He says he has a single reason for coming, and it isn't about dogma or doctrine or theology or churchianity. He says, life, I come to bring you life. Life
Life
more
is more
abundantly.
abundantly,
At
more
every
abundant.
instant, actually be alive with an actual live present moment experience.
And I didn't share this before, but that verse always amazed me, and I just knew there had to be something more to it, and I couldn't find an answer until we have met. So now it's coming together. I've come to bring you life and life more abundantly. Okay,
That's it.
now we're
And what
feeling
is,
that.
and let's, for anybody that's listening that's maybe new to the show, let's define what life is. Best definition I've been able to find is that life is love flowing through a cell. Anything that we do to inhibit love flowing through a cell shortens our lives and inhibits life. And forgiveness takes the inhibitors off.
Brings a whole new light to the verses of the Bible. Whole new
Yes.
light. Well, back to the reality, the output of my mind. Now, maybe I'm thinking about this too much, but I wanted to start with this because it's kind of stumbled. I'm stumbling on it. So, actuality is what happens in the world. And I know you've made
Correct.
that clear, the difference between the two. Now, I may have this wrong, but when I was learning some other things a few years back, and I think maybe Einstein kind of went along this thinking, and maybe that's where I heard it, is that when we view the electrons, we can actually, then they act differently.
Yeah,
And I can't.
it's called the observer effect. Once you
That's
wake
it.
up and
That's the
become
one.
the observer, you impact everything consciously. When you are unconscious and the energy is moving in you that's moving in you, you impact the same way, but it's unconscious impact. Literally, every brain cell that fires, every electron that moves in the mind, by its motion sets up an energy wave. Every energy wave carries the frequency of that which sourced it. If it meets something else with a similar frequency, then it impacts that something else. That's the observer effect. You can't look at a thing without changing it.
That is just that is so remarkable when I saw that experiment or video of it. So
let's add another piece from Yeshua on that, or at least what I would interpret or understand as a piece to that. You remember this woman who has a 12-year issue of blood. She's got a period that hasn't stopped for 12 years, and pretty traumatic because her role as a woman was to be a homemaker, and she wasn't even allowed in her own kitchen to prepare food for her family for 12 years. And what she says is that she knows that all she has to do is touch the hem of Yeshua's garment. What is she saying? He's holding, and what moves in that man is active present love. She can't quite get over the hill to that level of love that's going to allow her to process her next dis-ease that's interfering with the function of her reproductive organs. And so she knows she just needs to, we could say in a physics terms, connect with the electrons emanating from Yeshua. That's the hem of his garment. That's the support we can be for each other when we're actually functioning as active present love.
Beautiful.
And so we're told in that case, you know, in that story, there's what's called the throng of people. I don't know how many people there are in a throng. You know, it might be 2 or 10. It might have been the 5,000. Whatever number it was, there's only one person that was in resonance, that whose frequency was at a point where she could be touched by the hem of his garment, by the energy emanating from him of support for healing. And that's why when they tried to lay the healing on him, he said, no, it was her. It was her being the space to receive what I was sending. Now look at, there were 5,000 more of you standing here, and not one of you made a shift. Why? Because you were still stuck in your crap. You weren't in willingness. You weren't open. You didn't have that pathway open to the right brain that could inform you with just a little support, would have just shifted your whole energy system. You weren't available to that. You were stuck in the mind of man, which Yeshua defines as Satan. You know, that passage where he talks to Peter, he says, get thee behind me, Satan, for you think in the mind of men. If you're stuck in the dead energetic constructs of the past, you're not available for the hem of his garment. And so it won't be he that determines whether or not any given individual heals. It will be the individual that heals that determines whether or not they heal. He is not going to heal anybody. He has never and will never heal anybody. But he is a space for those who are ready to make the move, and that's why he said to her, he said to the blind man, no, it was you, your faith. You had elevated yourself to the point where you are in resonance with what I'm here to provide. And now that you are a receiver for it, you'll get the benefit of that support. But it'll be because of what you did, not because of what I did. He said, I'm here always. I'll be here forever. I'll be holding this space forever. When you're ready to step up to that frequency and receive the energy, then bingo. And, you know, many are cold, but few are frozen. Or many are called, but few are chosen. Actually, everybody gets called, but few actually want to choose to do the work it takes to face the hate, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the pain, the trauma that's held within our genes, that ultimately, to be free of carbon-based memory, we need to process through and forgive. And this is the master tool for doing it.
Yeah, as you said, it's always our choice.
Yes.
Another beautiful light to that story. That is... her choosing is what healed her. Her choice.
It's an interesting passage, and I'm not remembering exactly where it is, but you know, they talked about the children of light. There's a particular city, and they spoke of what the population of the city was. Children of light, a city, and a population. Guess what the population of the city was? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
It was the speed of light, 186,400 miles an hour, 186,400 people, children of light. Are you ready to vibrate at that frequency?
So he was making a correlation of the speed of light to the population of that city?
Well, no, what I would hear in that, if you are going to be one of the children of light, one who actually lives as love, as the active presence of love or light, then there's a vibration you're going to have to match with. Because you're moving at the speed of light. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in that particular case, and if I'm remembering the number correctly, it was 186,400, in that particular case that he referred to them as the children of light, and then, or the scriptures do, and then the number of them is exactly what the speed of light is. Like, did they know that long ago what the speed of light was to come up with that particular number for a population and relate it to light? I think they knew a lot more than we ever gave them credit for. We're the primitives.
Yes. I'm believing that.
Stuck in the hostilities and fears and judgments and hatreds and vengeance of this insane culture. We're the primitives.
That's amazing. Speed of light. So Michael, before we leave the actuality that happens in the world, am I understanding this that we can affect that actuality either subconsciously or consciously? And
correct.
Subconsciously is going to be a negative.
Well, it wouldn't be subconsciously. Well, it would be subconsciously, but more powerfully unconsciously. No, not necessarily a negative effect. Just that whatever's there is going to have an impact. It's energy moving is going to have an impact on every energy system that matches it. Not necessarily negative, just unconscious.
I see. Because if I say it negatively, that's judgment.
I'm not sure where judgment fits into it. I would interpret negatively as something that does not support human life, does not support the active presence of love. And so there are some wonderful things in the unconscious, and they can create unconscious uplift. But if I come to something as a conscious uplift, I'm going to take things to a whole other level. And yes, oftentimes, out of our hostility or fear, the unconscious impact is negative and literally resonates to us. Remember, resonance creates motion. You know, if I hit a middle C tuning fork on a desk, I put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork, the second tuning fork starts to move. In the human realm, energy creates motion toward. Remember, Job, his big lesson, after all that healing crisis he went through, his lesson, his insight that he shared is that which I feared most has come upon me. That which I held as a tuning fork based in fear drew somebody else with a tuning fork based in fear, and they dumped on me what they had. So what would I do? Recognizing that that's what will happen, I would forgive as to my fear. And be finished with fear, so I'm not unconsciously drawing situations that will resonate fear.
So unconscious or conscious is actuality that's happening in the world.
Right. And just to clarify what we would mean by conscious, subconscious, unconscious. People talk about, you know, many minds, and, you know, there's this conscious mindset. They're not three different minds. Basically, when we're talking about conscious, subconscious, unconscious, we're simply talking about the amplitude of the information stored in brain cells. So if I say, don't think about the color of your car, I set up a resonance. In your subconscious is information about the color of your car. Through my voice hitting a little piece of plastic in my telephone or my headset, being transferred through an antenna that shoots a signal all the way out to Missouri, and then, you know, causes a little piece of plastic in your telephone to vibrate which causes some hairs in your ear to vibrate and some molecules move and your eardrum moves, and all of a sudden your brain thinks it hears my words, but it gives a meaning. And the meaning is whatever's in your subconscious mind. So if your car is green, I said, don't think about the color of your car. So subconscious and conscious are changing places all the time. Subconscious means information that I hold in my mind that I can access at any time. You know, what's my favorite food? What's the front door of my house look like? That's all subconscious information. And it's, as long as it's before I ask the question, it's subconscious. Then when I ask the question, through resonance, those brain cells fire and the information becomes conscious. Now, if I asked you, so Michael, there's a core issue in your life that right now your life purpose is to heal. What is that issue? What is it that you're in need of healing right now? And in this instant, observe what's happening with your breath. Just happened with your breath.
Held it.
Say again?
I held it.
You held it.
I kind of.
So your unconscious knows exactly what it is that you need to deal with. But the veil, when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they were not talking about a purple curtain in a church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. That veil is built with the breath. So when I ask a question that I know you don't really want to answer, I mean, you want to answer, but your mind's been trained not to answer, I know you're going to hold your breath in order to keep that shut down. And that keeps that information unconscious. That keeps it hidden. It's totally unnatural for us to have an unconscious mind. There shouldn't be no veil. Any information that's in our structure, we should be able to access at any time. But because we've been trained through denial, dissociation, and projection, we've learned how to create this unconscious where I don't know what's there and I don't want to know what's there. My great-great-great-great-grandfather didn't want to know, and he didn't want to look at that terrible thing that happened to his dad. And, you know, we could go on and on with stories. What's stored in the unconscious? And one of the reasons why people don't want to engage in this worksheet that we're working on is because sooner or later there's an intuitive knowing that what's in their unconscious they're going to have to look at. So the veil of the temple's this body-mind unit, carbon-based memory, that stores the past, 666, stored in carbon. And to open it and clean out its content is one of the objectives of this work. And so the veil of the temple needs to be opened, and it's opened with the breath. That's where the breath comes in. It's all physics,
so
physiology.
Do you think that there's a point back in time when humanity didn't have the unconscious?
Absolutely.
That it was just that,
yeah, go back. Look at we got records of people living 900, 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the lifespan degrades as we go into deeper and deeper unconscious dynamics. And, you know, we're at the point where we say somebody lives 100 years, they've done a really great job. When you really think about it, if you recognize that you have a device that the Creator designed to live for eternity and you kill it in less than 100 years, that's pretty amazing. What if we were never designed to die? In fact, go back and read it. That book tells us, with man, death began. We made death up. It was not the Creator's doing. We did it to ourselves. And so, what are the energetic patterns that can kill us? Are we willing to open the veil of our own temple individually and collectively and process through it? You know, the woman who had the 12-year issue of blood, that, you know, disorder may have been, you know, female organs may have been the thing that ultimately would have killed her. But she was willing to face whatever needed to be faced. Now, the scriptures don't tell us what it is that she faced, but they do tell us that, you know, he tapped into, now the way they say it, he said, I sense, I feel as if virtue has left me. What was he saying? Whew, there was a dip in my energy field as it transferred to you to support you in processing whatever it is you had to process.
Wow.
And each of us can be on the support team of each other person on the planet in being that space. But we can only be that space for what we have worked through. And so the worksheet is about working through those things, unloading load after load, so that we can stand as that space for anything, for anybody, at any time, anywhere on the globe. Back several months ago, I was doing a still point session, and I, normally when I'm doing a still point session, my eyes are closed and I'm just, laying, breathing. And I was inclined to look down. My eyes were closed, but I was inclined to look down. And I was shown a visual of such a vast space of darkness that I could hardly comprehend it. It was just like so vast. And dotted throughout that whole vast space, there were specks of light that I could see, countless numbers of specks of light. And what I was then shown, or was in a silent voice explained to me, was that these points of light were my ancestors, and the darkness was what they were carrying. And they were asking if I would be the space, if I was willing to support them by being the space for that darkness to be processed for them.
Oh.
And you think about Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane, and there are all these churchianity interpretations of, taking on the sins of the world, like it was some kind of burden for him or some kind of trauma. No. He was being the space and saying, I'm here to support the world's healing. I'm willing to take on all this energy and process it. And in that particular instance, that experience for me was a direct experience of my ancestors asking me if I would be that space for them. And there was some interesting affirmation to it, because usually when I do a still point session, my phone is off. But at the moment, actually, I had this, silent voice saying, my ancestors saying to me, Michael, would you support us in processing this darkness that we're carrying? And I, out loud, which is not something I would usually do, especially when I'm doing a still point session by myself, out loud, I said, yes, I am here. I will be that space. And my phone rang, and my son was on the phone. My son and I have never had a conversation about ancestry or, who his grandfather, he never met his grandfather. He was gone long before my son was born. There was never any kind of conversation. He's now in his 40s. And his first words are, hi, Dad, I'm on Ancestry.com, and I need some information about some of our ancestors. Literally, the second that I said out loud, yes, I will support processing that energy, yes, pass it through me, my son's on the phone asking that question.
Amazing. It's all tied together, isn't it?
Yeah. So are you willing to stand beside Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane and say, yeah, I'll help take it on? That's what we're called to do.
That's what we're called. That's our choice.
Stand shoulder to shoulder. Shoulder to shoulder, yeah. With our brother. You remember he didn't say it was his father, it's our.
Our.
We are the sons. He is our father. And it is his good pleasure to give us the Greeks called it the game of heaven, but the words were the community of love. Not this Old Testament dude that's going to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm. And that's raging.
Yeah. And so many people are working out of those brain cells. It's like, to me, you know, you take that story of the Old Testament and people are trying to resolve it and figure it out and he's going to punish us and created this hellfire and all this. And Yeshua's like, hey, guys, I have a correction for you. Let's see. We're going to call it the New Covenant. All that old stuff is crap. Our Father is love. It's his good pleasure to keep us in the community of love. Do you want to go there? Or are you going to keep living out of the dead, burying the dead, and the blind leading the blind? What are you going to do? Do you want out? Okay, here's the tool. It's called forgiveness. Now, all you have to do is face and process out everything of your ancestors that's based in darkness. Are you ready to do that? Otherwise, you will be run by, quote unquote, the sins of the Father, remembering that the word sin is an archery term that means off the mark. The energetic patterns of hostility or fear that are off the mark are going to run our lives unless we're connected to active present love. So when I'm in a stressful circumstance, do I stay connected to active present love? So I have the mind of God or the mind of Christ as a guide for me, as an advisor? Or am I stuck with what's in my genes from the past? Is that my advisor? And when I hold my breath, it's a clue. There's something I need to deal with. When I listen to my words will tell me what it is I need to deal with. Quite likely, it will sound like my power person's voice. I'll think it's my voice, but it's the words of my power person coming through me. And if I pay attention to them, it'll key me into my next worksheet, my next piece of healing.
Mm-hmm. And that information would be coming forth from our unconscious, those words.
The guidance, the support's going to come from the hem of his garment, the garment we all share. And what needs to be dealt with is going to be that which is hidden in the unconscious. And when I open the veil of my temple, to the degree that I'm willing to open it, to that degree I'll be able to process through it.
Okay. So the veil is between the subconscious and the unconscious.
The veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious, yes. There's a, you know, there's a slight barrier between conscious and subconscious. It's kind of an open, you know, a fenestrated barrier. Information's shifting back and forth all the time. But you'll notice in the workshop when I draw the stick man, I draw a number of dots, and that's the top of the circle is the conscious mind. The middle part of the circle is the subconscious. I can access that anytime, and there are wide open spaces. And then, remember, I draw a pretty solid line and just one little hole in the middle at the lower part. What's below that veil, that barrier, is the unconscious information. And that barrier is built with the breath. It's open with the breath. That's why there are so many reminders on the worksheet to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the Aramaic language in the creation story, it doesn't say God sent out his spirit. It says the creator sent out its breath. And we cut off from the breath, we cut off from the creator. Remember they talked about, and you know, it's interesting how people are running around dipping each other in water, supposedly baptizing. Yeshua, if you look at that story, and we went to John the Baptist because it was a Jewish tradition. Okay, go dip me in the water. All right. But you know, you'll notice he never baptized anybody. He never put anybody in water. Never did that thing.
Right.
What did he do? I will baptize you in the holy breath. Ruka dekudsha, the whole breath. And the Greeks translated it as the spirit. But it's about the breath. It's physiology. It's what happens in physiology when you breathe and what happens in the mind when you hold the breath.
We lose our source.
It's our source, exactly. Sometimes Jeannie comes in and tells me that I sound like I'm doing Darth Vader breathing, but you know, my habit is to always default to the breath, or at least as much as I can, till I come across my next issue. It's to default to the breath and keep the breath moving, especially when I'm processing with someone. That's part of the way to open the space and extend the hem of my garment to support somebody wherever they are in the world. Because time and space don't know anything about that energy. It goes anywhere. There's nothing solid enough in the so-called physical earth to stop that high energy wave.
It's there. It's there for all who choose, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's our core connection, and the denial of it, the denial of the Holy Spirit, the denial of the breath, is a way to separate from conscious, active, present love, to separate from the Creator.
So this is amazing. As you've explained the three, I'm understanding it more, and I think to popular contemporaries today that say, we're leading our lives 95%, well, 90, 95%, some say a little bit more, in the unconscious.
Unconscious, yeah. Most people's
so
thinking
going
is unconscious.
About the program.
Yeah. The dead burying the dead. One of our workshops is on creating consciously. You know, to recognize that we are creators and to own our creatorship and to do it consciously rather than what most people do is create things unconsciously. And then when they come bite them in the butt, they wonder what happened. You know, why are they doing this to me? What is this?
And if I understood what you said earlier, that when man was first created, unconsciousness was not part of the picture.
Correct. We had access to every piece of information in us.
So we have
Then we moved out of what you might call the religion of love, and we moved into the religion of blame, which meant, in order to blame something for something I had created, I have to dissociate from something in me. And now I begin to create an unconscious mind, totally and completely unnatural condition. We're looking to reverse that and get back to the point where there is nothing unconscious. If there's a piece of information in you and you want to access it, that you can access it.
So when we are dissolving goals and things of that nature, we are breaking down the unconscious barrier?
Well, what happens, as I see it, the way I've come to understand it, mm-hmm. is when my mind constructs a particular perception, a picture, and I recognize the goal that's driving my mind to use that data to create that picture. So I've got a conscious, what's going on in my conscious mind is, Harry, he's such an SOB, look what he did to me, again. Just like my, you know, uncle or my brother or my father or whoever. So when I'm living in that game, I'm living out of unconscious dynamics. And so when I cancel the goal that's driving that process, construct of my mind drops into its root, creating a pathway into the unconscious, the part of me that's hidden. And now I can make the unconscious conscious in the presence of active love, and the error in my unconscious dynamics automatically dissolves when love is conscious, active, and present. And so that unconscious energy is transmuted. And that is forgiveness. Now, if you don't have the brain cells for that, that seems like a really crazy, complicated process. It's really pretty simple, but in order for me to explain what I just explained in the last 2.5 minutes, it took me 35 years of working with first century Aramaic forgiveness to go, oh, that's what's happening. Here's how you get to access your unconscious. You cancel the goal, the perception that comes from the unconscious but is massaged into looking like Harry over there that I'm blaming, the religion of blame. When I collapse the projection on Harry, I get to drop directly into the core issue that I've been hiding from, and maybe in my bloodline, my generation's been hiding for 100 generations. And when I can access that and bring it to the conscious level, there's a great line in the Course in Miracles that says, you want to bring the world you do not want to the one you do. So you want to bring the world of hurt, pain, sadness, grief, rage, hatred, vengeance, suffering, whatever it is that has not been resolved in the generations, and you want to bring that forward to the presence of love. And when love is actually present, when that state of being is present, that light dissolves the darkness, or should I say disperses the darkness, because darkness has no power and no presence of its own.
So forgiveness again is transmuted unconscious energy.
That would be correct, yes.
That is
transmuted, removed, the dynamic of it removed from the unconscious. So a result might look like, so I go through a forgiveness process and I process through it and I'm finished with it. And next week I'm downtown and I happen to run into a situation that normally, like for all my life, when something like that happened, and maybe it's happened 6 times, I would just go into terror and run and hide. And today, having done that piece of forgiveness work last week, I'm downtown, that event happens, and instead of running in terror, I take a breath and I remember, oh yeah, I remember how that used to happen. Wow. So I can see how that triggered that old terror of great-great-grandfather who watched his father get murdered when he was a child, and they were downtown. And I see now where that, I understand where that terror came from, and I don't have to entertain that terror anymore because I have forgiven it. I have removed its impact on me. Otherwise, I'll be advised by and run by, quote-unquote, the sins of the Father. Remember, they talked about sins of the Father would pass to 3 and 4 generations of those who hate me. And there's the Creator, love, talking to you and I, saying if you, and hate there, that word in Aramaic is not hate as in a love-hate relationship, but as in separated. So here's the Creator saying, buddy, if you really want love's advice, if you want my advice, I'm happy to be here for you. But if you are separated from me, that word hate being separated from the active presence of love, then the only thing you got is what your generations did. That's the only advisor. You just lost me. You cut me out of the equation. You pushed me out. So now what have you got? Oh, you got great-grandfather's rage and great-grandmother's pain and fear and great-great-grandfather's abuse. And, you know, they're your advisors. As long as you are holding your breath and therefore separated from the flow of active present love, life through your cells. And if you do enough of that inhibiting the flow of active present life, love through your cells, you'll die. To do that is off the mark. It's sin. And the wages of sin, the result of that, is you kill yourself. Like, stop it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's time to put an end to it. Hold to active present love, access every dynamic of the generations out of your relationship with the Creator, out of your relationship with love, and process through and forgive those generational dynamics. Now you've cleaned out your store. There's a passage, I think it was in the book of Thomas, where the disciples are with Yeshua and the Pharisees are all over Yeshua. And the disciples are kind of like, well, why don't you sock it to them? Why don't you give them back some of their own medicine? Yeshua says, I have none of that in my store. Like, I'm not carrying that. I'm done with that one. But we're only in a disturbed, upset state when something in our world is resonating, something that's in our sore. And life's purpose is to resonate everything in your store that would kill you in order to give you the opportunity one more time to say, oh, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. This is my energy. This is my forgiveness opportunity. So instead of whining and blaming Bill over there, I'm going to apply forgiveness to this which is in me, my generational pattern. I'm going to take on the sins of my generations. I'm going to stand in willingness, my veil wide open, and absorb and bring every bit of darkness to the light that I possibly can. What was that story that Dad used to tell me about great-grandpa? What was that story that Auntie Helen told me about Uncle Bill? Mm-hmm. Am I willing to process all that? Am I going to breathe in the presence of that when it starts to move in me? You know, it's like this scriptural stuff is so much more eminent than some kind of churchianity thing that people do on Sunday morning or preach about on Wednesday night. It's like if it's not taking people to their works, what is it? What use is it? Well, it puts a lot of money in preachers' pockets, but you look at the terrorism that's often, yeah, you know, emanates from the pulpit in the name of a man who at least 15 times said, fear not.
Yeah,
so nobody can teach what they haven't worked through.
Well,
so what's happening with your breath, my friend?
I can say I'm breathing again.
All right. Yay.
Thank you. I am. This is, of course, the first time I've heard this thought about this reality, about the unconscious. And it is just remarkable. So that leads me to think that if our Creator created us without that, with the beautiful scenario of just the subconscious and the conscious and not the fear and all the anxiety and hatred and vengeance that humanity has today, me has today. So that came in by man, because with man, death began.
Correct.
At some point, is there any thought, or do you have any thoughts on when this began to happen? I know what some of the religious books say, but what
the first words of blame, the first words of blame that come out of anybody's mouth. Remember the mind, you know, remember the Harvard research we talked about in a time frame in the lab where 10,000 brain cells are firing. What they were able to measure was that our conscious awareness was a max of 9 bits of data.
Okay.
So 10,000 units of electrical energy moving on an unconscious level, 9 bits get into conscious awareness. The minute, so when you realize you're looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing, out of what is perhaps a 20 trillion bit actuality, you realize you're looking at evidence. The only evidence you ever get to see is the evidence that your words, remember the power of life and death is in your words, you only get the evidence that your words allow your mind to show you. So if my words are those of blame, oh, that old Moses guy, he was the problem in my life. Now I'm in denial. I think Moses caused this pain that's happening inside of me. Now, that's a lie. The pain's happening inside of me. Obviously, it's inside of me. But I just said to my mind, this pain that's in me, don't you dare show me that it's mine. Put it into my brain's image of Moses. Then I can pretend that Moses is the problem. I just created an unconscious mind. Now listen to the blame game going on in the world. I mean, just sit in front of the TV. And you know, I haven't offered this exercise for some time, but I used to quite often in my workshops offer an exercise. So, okay, sit in front of your TV, and we want you to listen to each station you listen to for no more than 30 seconds. Take a piece of paper, draw a line, a regular 8.5 by 11 piece sheet of paper, and draw a line just 1 inch wide down the left margin. So you got a left margin that's 1 inch wide, and then you got 7.5 inches across the rest of the page. Now, spend no more than 30 seconds on any TV station that you want to turn on. And so 30 seconds, flip the station. 30 seconds, flip, 30, flip, 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 flip. And every time you hear a word that's based in actual conscious, active, present love, put a check mark in the 1 inch margin on the left. And every time you hear a word based in hostility or fear, put a check mark on the right side of the page. How many 7 by 11 pages do you, or 7.5 by 11 pages do you suppose you'll fill with check marks based in hostility or fear before you get one inch column with words actually based in love coming out of that box?
If any.
If any.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the brainwash of the world. So the power of life and death is in our words. What words are we engaging in? There are words,
Michael,
of life. Do you suppose they're the words based in love or the words based in hostility and fear? Yes, sweetie.
There's a question in the chat room. It says, what's the difference between conscience and consciousness?
So, well, we haven't actually addressed either of those words. If we're talking about conscious mind, it's just what I'm consciously aware of at any given moment. Consciousness, I would define as what I am aware of at any given moment. So if I'm in hostility or fear, I have a consciousness of hostility or fear. If I'm in love, I have a consciousness of love. And then conscience would be that knowledge that I have perhaps stored in my unconscious that wants to tell me the truth, but I'm in denial of it. So I want to blame Bill, and I want to puke all over Bill, and my conscience says, that's not a right thing to do, Michael. You don't want to do that. But, you know, I've put all my rage into my brain's image of Bill, so I really want to lash out at him and punish him. And so my unconscious dynamics have me lashing out. That's the religion of blame. That's what most of the game is about. And the number one blamer, the one creature being blamed by most of the religionists is God. That's why there's so much rejection of the Creator, because people aren't thinking of the Creator as love. They're thinking of it as some kind of a, oh, well, out to get me. So that would be how I would define those words, each of those words. And the consistent, persistent way to get into and access your own unconscious dynamics. There, you know, people accidentally fall into this sometimes and accidentally carry out a process that leads to a release of something. But there's nowhere else I know of where there is a consistent, persistent way you can do that on a daily basis aside from this worksheet, aside from first century Aramaic forgiveness. You breathing? Everybody breathing?
Yes.
I'm breathing. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Well, Michael, we didn't get into the actual print of the worksheet.
Oh, we did.
A wonderful, a wonderful big background for me.
Great questions. Great questions.
Oh, thank you for bringing this to light. I've heard things today I have never come close to hearing before, and it is all making more sense to me.
and we've only just begun.
Just begun. Like you say, and it's, I can't even wrap my mind around it, that we're just scratching the surface. I think you have kind of mentioned that you're just scratching the surface after all the many years that you have processed this work.
In order to heal, Michael, you got to be out of your mind. This isn't about the mind figuring it out. This isn't about somebody's going to set up a set of rules and here's the dogma or the doctrine that everybody has to follow. This is about each individual taking the tools, being offered the tools, and engaging in those tools and coming to a personal experience, not hearing about somebody else's personal experience, not hearing about Yeshua's personal experience, and, oh, there it is, that'll do for me. No, listen to what the man says. The men who he told what they had to do, half of them said too hard a saying, and they left and never came back because they didn't want to do the work. So there are all kinds of religions about Yeshua. But not too many people want to engage the one of Yeshua, what he laid out to do. And what he laid out was how to clean up the generational patterns, how to awaken as a true created human being, which is love, and to incarnate in your form in the world and be a conscious creator in the world. And everything that the scriptures offer is an allegory for the process of doing that. You can't explain that to the left brain, to the rational linear brain. It's like, wait a minute, that's where the parable comes in. You open the right brain where this can be comprehended and never spoken through the use of a parable and through the use of tools. He says, here are the tools. Half of the people, he said, half of the disciples that he offered it to, they said, too hard a saying, and they left. And then, you know, the other 12 must have been looking pretty doubtful, because then Yeshua turned to Peter. He says, are you guys, you going to leave too? Mm-hmm. Is this too much for you too? And they're the ones that went out and made up religion. And what do? You just let him handle it for you. Well, in a sense, that's true. If you hear his words and you actually decode his actual meanings of those words, then he is going to save you. There's no question about it. And the only thing you need to be saved from is your own yourself, your own generational patterns. The hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the quote-unquote sins of the Father.
And in my case, I think it's in everyone's, what we're taught to figure it out.
And yeah.
We need to actually go the other way, the opposite way.
Go deeper into my mind and have my left linear brain figure it out. That's the number one pseudo solution. In the codependence intensive, we lay out, I don't know, 12 or 14 different, what I call pseudo solutions, the non-being mind. But the number one is always, if I could just figure this out. You can't figure it out. You can take tools and work through it, but figuring it out will never happen. Nobody has ever figured it out, and nobody ever will. When you start, you know, just from the brain cells we've got as we're talking about it here, when you start looking at, okay, so we got two people in a conflict, and we're going to figure the conflict out. Well, let's see now. Bill had a grandmother whose trauma was from her great-grandfather, who really was portraying what his great-great-great-grandfather did. And then the great-great-great-great-grandfather, then to the other person in the conflict, there was a grandmother. And you're never going to figure that stuff out. It's just not going to happen. But at any moment, if I'm willing to take the tool and I'm willing to face what's in me and embrace whatever's there, access it and process through it, then I can process through everything. I can apply forgiveness. So what can't be figured out can always be forgiven. And that's where the resolution lies.
And that energy can still be transmuted.
Precisely. If love is conscious, active, and present, I'm not talking about the mamby-pamby, I love you kind of stuff. That's all fake. That's all fraud. Falling in love, that whole thing is all fraud. Living as the active presence of love is where the resolution is. And, you know, we each started out, if you hold a newborn, everybody will attest to the fact that the newborn is love. We each and every one of us started out that way. And we came into a world who was expert at slapping the love out of us, one way or the other, mental, emotional abuse, and then sending us off to find somebody to love us or somebody to love. Remember that tune? Don't you want somebody to love? It's all a fraud.
Yeah.
Don't you want to function as conscious, active, present love? That's what your goal has to be in order for your mind to follow that lead and produce the result of living as a true human being.
It'd be a much better life, wouldn't it?
That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're right down to the point where in a few seconds the show's going to cut us off, so great questions, great conversation, great lead into the next step of our worksheet. It's going to be a great series on the worksheet.